Hello, and welcome to this ILTA Ask the Expert podcast, where we'll discuss security measures that need to be made up high and down low. John Washburn has joined us today, and he's the National Manager of Technical Operations at Stoll Reeves LLP and is a member of ILTA's Legal Sec Council. Thank you for being here, John.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'd like to start by asking what security-related exposure keeps you awake at night, and what steps have you taken to mitigate the risk?
Well, I think as far as exposure goes, first of all, single points of failure is one of those, and that's really, you think, well, isn't that an availability thing? And I'd say yes, because that's part of the, security triad, right? Confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And so we've designed all the systems we can to be as redundant as possible to make sure that we don't have any kind of single points of failure that might not make our data available or put us at some kind of increased risk. I'd say other things that keep me awake at night are users. People are still the number one security risk in anybody's security program. And, how do we better educate users and keep them on track, following procedure, doing the best thing possible to protect the firm's assets? Another thing is encryption. In law firms, I believe I read a survey recently from the ABA that said viruses are still more prevalent at law firms than the reported use of encryption. I hope that's not the case, but I found it is difficult to get people to remember to encrypt their USB drives, to use the best managed file transfer methods possible that use encryption and logging and everything like that. But I can't stress enough and continue to stress encryption, encryption, encryption over and over again, and how important it is that all staff, especially the staff exchanging confidential information with clients, use it all the time.
And from a security perspective, which do you prefer? Up high or in the cloud or down low on the premises, and why?
I think it really depends. We have some services in the cloud already. The services that we put in the cloud, we hold the encryption keys for, so we manage the keys ourselves and don't even let our vendors into our environment. They're a platform that provides us a place to put things in the cloud. And while they could certainly delete our stuff or somehow disable our environment if they wanted to, they can't see into it, and that's a key. I think when you're up high in the cloud, you really have to make sure you own your own keys. You also have to make sure that you keep a backup yourselves in case anything happens, right? You don't want to just rely on your one cloud vendor to both hold your data and back it up. You need to make sure you have it backed up either at another cloud vendor or even maybe back in your data center or your premises. Down low, like I said about backups, keep the data close to you somehow so that you don't have all your eggs in one basket. I think also on the premises, security is where you're really dealing with staff education and access. No matter where you put stuff, even if you put all your data in the cloud, you're still going to have network connections to the cloud. You're probably still going to have offices, or if anything, people working from home. And so you're going to have to manage the security of those network connections back into the cloud and manage the security on premises, either by encrypting the machines people use or by controlling as best you can the methods for how they put data in and take data out of your network.
How will increased security regulations affect legal organizations in the long term?
I think they'll have a net positive effect. I think HIPAA is not some kind of special regulation for healthcare to add security just to healthcare. You're taking common sense that we should be using in any practice about how we manage our data, enforcing healthcare people to use that common sense. I think the controls that you see in HIPAA and the controls you see in the ISO 27001, 27002 framework, and those kind of things are going to become more security regulations, either maybe at the state level. It is a little bit, for example, in Massachusetts already. They have some data privacy and protection laws, and they even have an organization called LOMAP that helps attorneys practice in that state and follow the rules. I think you're going to also see more regulations from maybe the federal level or maybe an industry level, which aren't really regulations so much as agreed upon metrics like PCI DSS. I think we're going to see more of that affecting all companies, including law firms, going forward. I'd also add that as we all look at cybersecurity insurance and the real gray area that cybersecurity insurance is these days, as far as premiums, coverage, liability goes, I've heard a lot of talk recently from insurers that they would possibly use the ISO 27001 framework as the guideline for measuring risk at firms that want to have cybersecurity insurance. And that the more you follow that guideline or the more you're certified, the more it might affect your premiums or your coverage. So while that wouldn't be a regulation per se, I think that the insurance industry and cybersecurity insurance may also have a real long-term effect on how law firms operate.
Now, they say people are the weakest link within the organization, and awareness training is becoming a norm. But how do you really get users to be motivated to keep the firm's data secure?
I think, you know, repetition is one thing. I think being creative about it is important. You know, having a security awareness program doesn't just make people take training once a year and say, yay, you've passed, go about your business. You know, you got to find creative ways to get security in front of them all the time and also to illustrate the consequences. I've been doing some presentations here recently in the Portland area on file transfer security and talking about, you know, issues where use of unencrypted CDs or unencrypted USB keys has caused some real problems relating to articles that are public information in the news over the last few years. Also, doing videos or posters or tip sheets, emails, anything you can think of just to kind of keep that awareness going over time. Don't let it become this task that they have to do once a year in order to maintain access to the network, though I would definitely recommend that as some kind of annual mandatory security training metric. But make sure there's other things too, or even try and find ways to make it a win-win, right? There is some security training out there and some privacy training available that can also be applied as continued learning education, CLE credit. So if you can find ways to make your security training also count towards that, I think it's a better motivator, especially for your attorneys, to say, not only am I getting security training, but it counts towards my continuing legal education. And if you go look at the bar, you know, the ABA rules, I think it's 1.1 and 1.6, that talk about attorneys maintaining technical knowledge and technical acumen with regards to securing client confidentiality, there is really legitimate reason for making that part of continued legal education.
These have been some great tips. And that brings us to a wrap for today. And I'd like to thank our listeners. Please join us for more Ask the Expert podcasts. And ILTA extends a big thank you to John for sharing some insight with us today. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, too.